There are those who say where you've been to. I'm afraid, yet I'm gonna show you. I'm aware that there is evil in a room full. Find your needle. There's a noise in the background, the only thing that stayed the same. There's a noise in the background, the only thing that stayed the same. Like the distance we are now gone. Sometimes I ask anyway.
Tu mi amamo de vida jomo. Tu mi amamo de vida jomo. Tu mi amamo de vida jomo. Tu mi amamo de vida jomo.
Want it straight up, but truth is bitter.
Talk about your album, your journey as artist, and then we'll talk about you too.
Okay, cool. Oh yeah, and then called yes, I remember that.
And then what's
coming up? Set up.
Yeah, it's nice, right?
Yeah,
it's an awesome place.
This is Mally, aka Docupitson. This is Artists in the City. We're heard every week, 6 to 7, right here on Roots Reggae Radio.
We have in the studio with us, this is my second studio interview, it's very exciting, and we have Nick.
Hello, yes, Nick Murray, representing Lal.
And Rosina Cassie.
Yeah.
Yep.
Welcome to the studio.
I'm just shocked at Nick's like intro.
Yes.
So maybe, you know, take listeners, you know, to your journey as artists, because you've been around for so long.
Me and Rose connected when we were working at a record store, and I was making rap music at the time, and she was a singer just working on developing her skill, and we got together and made music and did our first record called Corners. We went on to make subsequent records, 3 subsequent records after that, and we are now in 2013.
So how long have you guys been making music?
This would be
98, I guess.
Yes, 98.
2008, 10. Yeah. There have been 15 years.
There's been some breaks in between there. Like maybe every 2 years we do a record or so. So, yes.
Like 4 years.
Some 4 years, yeah.
Yeah, he's really nice too about it, because I literally just chased him down and made him work with me. Yeah, now we do kind of, we help other people produce stuff and get grants and try to promote music and art in a community grassroots way, because that's kind of how we do it.
It's sort of like a really interesting project, because you know, it's a collaborative kind of process. So maybe talk about your last album.
So the last album was called Just Lal. We used to be on Public Transit Recordings, which we pick up and we love out of Montreal. But we decided to go and try independently, so we just put it out by ourselves, which we will never do again. But we did it, and it was a collaborative art project with 3 friends of ours, George, Mish, and Andrea. And essentially it's like a poster comic that folds into a CD. But with that, we also approached about 6 to 10 different indie filmmakers to pick to do like a very independent videos for each song. So I think we've done like 6 or 7 so far. And the whole concept, this idea that everyone looks at the future being so bleak, and that communities who are marginalized or poor or whatnot, you know, don't have a lot of power. And I kind of believe the opposite. I feel like we have actually a lot of resources and resilience in our communities, and you know, the future doesn't have to be bleak. And a lot of the time it isn't in our own communities. It's just our communities don't get highlighted, you know. So it's kind of about that concept that there's always been hope in people fighting and for something different. Just because we're not recognized, like as the big media would recognize us, doesn't mean we're not powerful. So it's kind of about all of that. And we toured in India with it. We're touring Canada, Ontario in March, and just trying to challenge people to think beyond, like, you know, that we're just poor and struggling. It's like there's so much creativity and love and energy that comes out of that, you know, right? So it's the project is loosely based on that concept.
Yeah, it's sort of like kind of refiguring where does wealth kind of lie, right?
So totally, and what wealth is, yeah, you know? Yeah,
right,
totally.
Defining that kind of thing.
Exactly, because I'm tired of hearing about, like, let's go save, you know, the Africans and the Indians. It's like, you know, the Africans and Indians can save themselves. So yeah, no way.
Whoa.
Well, in terms of poverty. In terms of poverty. Like, I go from Bangladesh.
Whoa.
No, but that's what we see. Like, we played in the slum in India, and this slum is considered, like, you know, Slumdog Millionaire based on the slum. And the way they depicted it was like, oh, look at this poor community, doesn't have a lot, blah, blah, blah. But when you go there, this is a totally organized, politically organized and socially organized community. And really amazing. And it's like, no, don't stop, like, stop talking about us like we need your help all the time. Just kind of stay out of our way, and then maybe we can actually get what we need to get done.
Where people's wealth lies, right?
So okay, sorry. Okay.
And you weren't paying attention because you were staring at your phone.
Yeah, I was totally paying attention. I was totally paying attention. I was just trying to contextualize the whole thing, right? I was trying to see the whole picture, really. That's what I was doing right there. That was me seeing the whole picture.
So maybe talk about your sort of collaboration with different filmmakers, because that's part of the project as well.
Yeah, we hooked up with our guy, Jose Garcia in Montreal. He did a video for us using Super 8 camera, which was pretty cool. We also hooked up with a bunch of people in Toronto, specifically Melinda Francis, well-known filmmaker from around town. We also hooked up with Faisal Anwar, who is also a very well-established Pakistani film media person, and he did an amazing video for Old Cities for us. We also did a video with Siobhan Bastian, who I'm playing with tonight at Unlovable.
Pure Vinyl.
If you were around... yeah, if you're around Dufferin and Ossington, or sorry, not Dufferin and Ossington, Dufferin and Dundas, yes, Dufferin and Dundas tonight, Unlovable, I will be playing records.
Island
and Joseph, yes.
And then Alejandra Iguar, basically people that we've known for a long time.
Yes.
Some of them filmmakers, some of them media.
Yes.
Some of them just emerging filmmakers. And we're like, here you go, just make something. And luckily they all did. So getting it out there is another question. We're not so good
that's
at that part.
It's
another process. But it's been really amazing to see people like really just do stuff with Detroit with Melinda. Like that was great.
And you know that will continue.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's all good. We've been around for 15 years. we have time.
So in the process of getting your album out there, those listeners that don't know the process of actually getting your record out there, what does that look like?
For somebody that is coming out right now?
No, like you specifically, what was that journey? And like, you
okay.
know, you're saying it's really, really hard to sort of put out, you know, an album independently. What do you mean by that?
Well, I mean, can I answer this?
Sure.
Actually, you should answer it because it's more your words than mine. I don't think it's hard at all. I think it's all about how you want to do it. Our aesthetic is kind of forever moving and changing and not so focused on a specific target. So, being that the case, we are dealt the blow that we are basically living in the world that we created. We are marketing to a specific group of people, and there's nothing wrong with that. In terms of if you are looking to do specific things like tour Europe or like create something bigger, or you have to be doing something more specific, you have to be a bit more targeted, you have to understand who you're playing with. And being that we're in a world that is being fed, like the internet is constantly being fed content, how you position yourself from everybody else is of key importance in this age. So I don't think anything we've done in the past is wrong. I think we're in every position that we're in because we wanted to be in this position.
Yeah, totally. I mean, it's difficult in the sense, I think, like definitely as independent artists, you have more outlet now and more autonomy. At the same time, you also, I really feel you need money to promote a record. If you're doing a specific thing. I think for us, because we're such a strange beast where we fit into so many different boxes and we play for so many different types of audiences, we confuse people, and so we don't fit into a traditional marketing plan.
Right.
And so that's where it becomes a bit tricky in Canada. You know, I feel like Canadian radio is still pretty safe. The fact that even reggae music isn't on all channels all the time is a problem, right? Or Bhangra or something in a city like Toronto, particularly because it's so multicultural, and it's still white power at the truth of it, right? So I think for us as people who speak politically against these things, as well as being so diverse, we're confusing, and I think maybe we scare people a little bit, but that's fine. But with that comes this amazing community that we have that just supports the work that
we never really wanted that. We wanted to play to our community, and that's what we do. We have a group of people all over Canada that we are able to market towards. Canadian radio has never been on the map for us, and we've never listened to it in terms of like
campus
radio. Like it's never been a thing that we wanted to do. We want to play weirdo places in Canada and Europe and India, and that's kind of what we've been doing and continue to do.
But you hope, like I was born in this country, and you hope that at some point they're going to recognize that we're here. You know what I mean? It's like, hello. It's like, it is frustrating because
for me,
we're in a racist system, and I'm not going to ignore that. And at the same time, I'm not going to get caught up with it and let that dictate the way I live my life. But it's also something that needs to change in this country. Like you're seeing First Nations people uprising now. And that's huge because people don't even know that there's reserves and, you know, like,
well, that's a whole other, we're off of music now. We're talking about a whole other thing now.
But it ties back into culture, and music is culture.
Okay, black people in Toronto have been making hip hop forever since Drake, before Drake. Is there any record of anything? I mean, there's an amazing website called City on My Back, run by my friend Tyrone Callender, which is excellent. And
he can't get a radio show on a major radio station. And that's ridiculous because his show had high ratings on Flow. As much as whether we like Flow or not, it's another question. But that's a problem, right? And that comes down to power. And so it's tied in. Culture isn't separate from power.
I think we're a very good representation of the this kind of mutant beast that happens out of neglect and kind of turns into its own kind of community and creates its own weirdness.
So I want to go back to the idea of like what, you know, internet is doing and sort of creating that sort of space. I mean, we are on internet radio right now.
Oh yeah, sorry, back to the question, yeah.
The opportunities that independent artists have now with this new sort of platform and how that's sort of changing the way you're able to get to your audience.
Yeah. So I think there's a good and a bad that I see. I think the good is that you can get on the internet, you can get your music out, you can connect to an international audience, you know, that's amazing. And you can put up content that you produce yourself with your own stuff. Like it doesn't have to be done in a big studio or big, like, you know, film company or housing, you know, a production house. But the flip side that I find is that as a musician, you want to spend time on the practice of making music. And so sometimes when you have to then do all the marketing as well as the social media, like I find that, you know, the music's getting worse or maybe not worse, but there's a pretty bad music out there as well. So it's like, well, what about, like, how do you find time to do both, to push yourself heavily, but then to really focus on making the music? So I've seen a decline in the quality of some of this stuff, like around the world, like the digital stuff, some of it's really bad, but great. I mean, it's hard. Like it's a fine line.
I think
line,
that
right?
will sort itself out.
I hope so.
Yeah, I think that will sort itself out as sort of the medium or the platform.
Yeah, I hope so. I definitely hope so. But that's what I've I've noticed. It's like the quality of the music. Yeah. It's like what people listen to. Like before, I used to listen to CKLN, and you would listen to like the 12 hours, whatever show was on next after the show that you like, you would listen to. And you were open to so many different types of things. Now you get to pick what you want to listen to. And so I wonder if then that doesn't challenge us to listen beyond what we think we're supposed to hear. And that saddens me because I listen to rock, to reggae, to hip-hop, just because I had campus radio on. And I learned so much, you know? And I find that people are just stuck in really genre-based music. Not everybody, but at the same time, you can get everything. Right? So I guess it depends on what kind of a listener you are. You know?
I definitely think in the age that the beginning stages of the internet has given us this amazing idea of choice, and I think now that people are understanding the nature of choice, we're kind of in another age of the internet where it's like we expect a certain thing from the people we're choosing from. So as a consumer, if you will, you have to separate yourself, as I was saying before, from the heap, in a sense where you are either a true artist or you are a true craftsman or whatever the case, or whatever you're selling. So you have to be very, in this day of the internet, I would say you should be very careful about what you put on the internet as of like a means of selling yourself. So you have to either be very, very focused and very positioned and understand that what you are trying to sell or what you are trying to put forth is part of the end goal, part of you touring, part of you being in another city and performing for a bunch of people. A lot of different music circles as of late, you're seeing like artists that aren't even on the internet. Like the best and new thing is like, who is this guy? Came out of nowhere, or there's one picture of him. Like that whole thing is holding a lot of weight right now, and I think it's a development that is going to be ongoing as the internet kind of like grows.
And also, who has access to the internet or like in this technology? I mean, like phone culture definitely in parts of like at least India, like everybody has a phone and MP3s, and so everyone's listening to music, but who controls that media too, right? So a lot of the time it's still the same people controlling the media to a certain extent, what gets shut down, what gets played. So it's like it's challenging. For me it's like the best way is still word of mouth. It's still someone telling me to listen to this track, or I heard it somewhere. Now I'm probably very old school that way, but I love that.
How do you balance or
I haven't actually figured out how to.
I mean,
it's ongoing dialogue.
It's about. I mean, it's like that. It's the question is weighted. The question is weighted. It's separating the idea of art from living, and the two are one and the same. Like you can't separate those two things. You don't ask a plumber why do you go to the. Like, I mean, I bring that analogy up all the time in interviews, but it's like...
I don't really get the plumber analogy.
It's like a silly question to begin with, but I mean, I love you, Melinda, but like this idea that... Well, there's this separation between what you do as a for a profession as...
No, I have the same kind of battle in my head.
And we're propagating that by asking these questions and creating this kind of atmosphere for this kind of thought of let me stop doing what I love to do and do something that I don't want to do, because that's how we're supposed to live as human beings, as opposed to being like, I love doing this and it makes the world a better place, why can't I just do this?
And sometimes you just have to get a job, like just accept the fact, like it's not that bad.
Yes.
You know what I mean? This boohoo like artist syndrome, it's like most people don't have to work. If you love
what you're doing. No, but I'm just saying the reality is we have to kind of, you know, make a living.
Okay.
Yeah,
in a utopia world, I wish we could just make art and live and da-da-da. But the reality is we do have to kind of pay bills.
Yeah, for
the
sure.
The question is why, how do you, well, I mean, if you take anything out of the equation, if you're not very good at something in the beginning, or if you're just figuring something out, you got to get a job and do something else. Essentially, if somebody's not buying your seashells on the seashore, you've got to sell coffee or something, you know. That's basically how it works. So if you're in the infancy of your artistic development, you have to figure it out and you have to work. Yes.
Yeah, and that's, I mean, for us, it's like I work part-time jobs, like 3 or 4 part-time jobs at a time, maybe, instead of one full-time job, because I just couldn't handle a full-time environment. And then up until like 3 years ago, I was able to go off full-time, but that's a lot to do with like getting grants, trying to move out of the grant system now, we've set up this, you know, unit too, because we've also recognized that people, you know, aren't making any money, and people aren't even eating. You know what I mean? It's not even like they're not making money. People are struggling even to find work in the city. So setting up Unit 2 was an attempt to actually try to provide some kind of income or food or something, some kind of positive energy, some kind of exchange, so you didn't have to spend a lot of money if you didn't have it. You could go to a spot where you weren't, you know, playing, you know, paying a really big door cover, or, you know, buying drinks for that's really expensive, you know? So trying to change up the way we even look at, like, money. But, like, live simply. Like, that's the biggest thing. If you want to live, like, in big cars and wear nice clothing all the time, then either learn to fix a car or make your clothing. You know what I mean? Like, you don't have to, like, spend that much money, right? It's like, and I think we live pretty simply. So that's part of it, too. We live in such a consumerist culture, right?
Live simply. I think living simply.
Okay, so that brings us to Unit 2. Maybe, like, how long have you guys sort of, been running the space yeah, how did that come about?
So we moved into 163 Sterling Unit 2 about, 4 years ago, I think, with the intent of trying to make it into a alternative cultural art space. So it took us about 2.5 years to kind of figure out how it worked and what we wanted to do and what we didn't want to do. And this year, I think we're finally launching it. So after 2 years of sort of experimenting from anywhere from, like, punk to hip-hop, to queer parties, to, like, dance parties, to, like, film nights, like, whatever. We finally feel like, okay, we have a system. We have some people helping now. So we're launching it in March. So we have, like, Debbie Young is having her comic strip launch on March 9th. Sunny B is an artist putting out a CD on March 1st. March 2nd is we're having a big dance party to sort of push the unit to. We've got a spoken word artist coming in from San Francisco who just happened to be in town for a 12-hour layover and wants to do a workshop. So I was like, cool, let's just make it happen. So he's going to come in. So we're just trying to create, and we did a community dinner about 3 months ago with a chef from Oakland. So we're just trying to see if we can make it sustainable and actually put some money in people's pockets at the same time and create art that's accessible. So we'll
it's vibes, you know,
happens.
Certain vibes. We're just coming with the vibes. That's all we're dealing with right now. We're just coming with, like, a vibe.
And it's a mix up of people. Like, people think that, like, all kinds of communities can't come together.
Yeah.
Because of whatever reason. And we've been able to kind of, we represent a lot of different spaces. And they somehow come together and don't fight. And I think it's because it's our home as well. So you're not just stepping into, like, a space. You're stepping into our home. And you can feel that vibe.
Right.
Like, we're hosting it. We're there, you know. So. And if there's a problem, let's work it out. Because this, you know, that's how you work problems out. Like, not just by talking about it and learning about it, but actually, like, let's, if you need to get into a fight over something or build trust, then you build trust in the same room, dancing together, eating together, making music together. So that's the attempt, you know? So hopefully, and it's been working so far. Yeah.
So what is your, because you said that, like, you're kind of working out, like, the business model and how to make it sustainable. What was that process?
It was more like losing money for the first two years. Like, making enough money off our art to pay our rent. Somehow we managed to do that with roommates, throwing parties. But we never really made money, or usually would lose money, because I'm not a good business person. So then we brought in a couple of friends who then are trying to help us establish a little bit of a different model. And again, it might not work, right? So we're hoping, but at least we have a system in place. And we don't want to get it to a point where it's, like, strict, you know, where it's not flexible, where it's not fluid, because I think that's also a problem. So we're not sure if it's going to work.
I mean, it's not really a profit-based business. It's not sustainable. It's completely
sustainable.
It's completely, there's no real, like, there's never been the intention. Only time we really concentrate on making money is when it's for people's, like we had a fundraiser for somebody that wanted surgery for something. So that was, like, one of the things we did. So it really is for the people, by the people kind of approach.
Yeah.
It's kind of organically as you go through.
Yeah.
We're getting serious about the structure of it and how it looks, and, like, who we are who are and how much we're charging for space and stuff and, like, that sort of thing. But
also with that, like, keeping in mind that, like, we wanna, it's, you will not be turned away if you don't have money. You know what I mean? Like, it's not about that. Like, certain events, if someone's renting the space, okay, maybe I can't dictate so much, but for our events, we will not turn you away just because you don't have cash. And it's accessible. Like, we're still working on the bathroom a bit, but it's definitely accessible. for wheelchairs that are more agile. But yeah, so we're just trying to do that.
Like, how important do you think, you know, or artists have access to that space to actually have these kind of events?
Like, in general, like, independent,
yeah.
Like, I think it's
so
really important.
There's so little space in the city, so.
It's always been space like that. It's just been, like, really undercover, underground, or a subculture. So I think it's always existed in different ways, you know? And then I think for some reason in Toronto, you know, pricing went up. All these places that were kind of illegal living, quote unquote, were taken over by condos and people who had money. And so more and more people got pushed outside of the city or out of these spaces. So there's still some of these spaces available. I think they're just harder to find, but I think people are doing this in the city. You know, you just have to know where to go, and that's like the difference a little bit.
Yeah.
I think it's always been a part of culture, like in every society. There's always some place that you can go and find kind of alternative culture.
Well, I mean, it's kind of different when you're dealing in different styles of music. In rap music, there's not many performance spaces available in the city that I can think of, and but that's a negative. But I think what was the question?
I was saying how important,
yeah,
you know, space is.
It's a very important thing, especially for the urban stuff that's coming. I hate that word urban. Sorry, the stuff that is coming from the people of, from black people. Black people music that is coming out of Toronto, yo.
You can say black.
Black, yo. Black West Indians, non-Celtic, non-Saxons, non-Nordics. People with brown and beautiful skin are doing music that is not always taken into by like bigger establishments, like because of issues of violence, and there's a serious lack of space for that. I mean, when I was coming up, I was at the Rivoli or I was at Focus or any of those places. Like, I'm an old guy, right? I'm old, but like, I can't think of those places right now where you actually have a space to go hear rap music that is like pretty dirty and nasty. Like, where do you go to do that?
That's right? Not just a bunch of white hipster kids.
Like,
that's
that doesn't, I mean, like the turf guys, like the hood guys, like where are those guys going? Like,
they,
we had,
you know,
spaces.
They're going somewhere, whether it's someone's house,
yeah,
or it's like,
I mean,
like,
I'm specifically talking about
still basement parties.
Yeah, I'm talking about
a downtown place. Like, I'm just talking about that whole downtown vibes.
More, yeah.
But I'm sure there's places, but like, there used to be a lot more. But yeah, that is a very important, especially if you want music to grow more so than just a bedroom studio. Like, there has to be a space for performance.
Yeah.
Yes, I think that's very
important.
But I
think, like, more and more people are doing, like, 88 Days, I think, has a space.
Yes,
88
Days.
Like, in this city, I feel like it's a lot of, like, kind of white art, indie rock kids or, like, visual artists who have these spaces. And so people of color have had these spaces, but they've traditionally been like basement parties or very different house parties, very different kind of atmosphere. Oh, that's what I'm used to. So now it's
I'm
like, well, how do
that.
We then, what, not going to
basement
someone's
party?
House party or basement party?
I'm not used to the idea that it's only been white people and indie rock people having spaces. I'm used to the idea that people,
like, independently run art spaces in Toronto. Are you serious?
Well, I mean, there was places in Kensington. There's
currently.
Oh, we're talking about currently.
Currently. Oh, Noah's got a space in Kensington. Like, but like, I feel like currently there aren't as many. Debbie had a space, but it's not as much as, let's say, a lot of, you walk on Queen Street, like, it's all.
Well,
it's all white artists. Like,
well, I'm talking like, anyways, whatever. We're being specific. We're being nitpicky.
Well, okay, I don't know what. Anyways, but I feel like, so there's, yeah. And now there's like, so Debbie Young had a space. Noah's got a space in Kensington. We have a space. 88 Days has a space. And so collectively now, how do we tell each other about each other's space as well? Not just being like, this is my space, let's compete with each other. It's like, no, I'm going to, like, let's let each other know about our spaces, work together, create a different community, because they're scared of folks of color. Like, you wear a certain thing and they don't want you walking into the room. You know, like, for reggae music to finally be played at Harborfront, what, like 3 years ago? For like the first time ever, it's like, what's going on? This is a problem in the city, and people don't want to, because of fear, because of how we've been treated, don't want to call out the racist system in this country.
Yeah, it's,
you know,
pretty
our
bad.
Our prime minister, our flipping, like, our mayor, like, really? This is a problem, and so people really need to, like, I think more and more of these spaces are being created because we need something safer for ourselves, you know?
Yeah. 88 Days is a beautiful example of that, because they're catering to a very specific crew of people. And it's a very beautiful space, too.
Well, I think when you have those spaces that sort of, you know, going back to the, you know, community and sort of like the growth of, you know, people's art can actually
totally
grow.
Yeah,
you know, you're not just kind of like in isolation, like
yes,
on your art.
Yes,
you're collaborating with other people, you're making tracks, because like art is collaborative.
Yeah.
So
yeah, I don't really believe in that. I think art, it can be whatever it can be. It can be collaborative. It can be one guy in front of whatever. It can be whatever it is. But like the idea that you can show your music for other people is a beautiful thing. Definitely.
Well, maybe I'll just like clarify. Yeah. Maybe
yeah.
Like a culture.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
Yes. Sort of push
yeah.
A culture.
Yeah.
You have to work with other people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And also
yeah,
like
yeah.
Gaining. Not just like throwing parties, and because parties get bigger and then you have to go to bigger spaces, but owning these spaces, like we need to, and I'm not into ownership of land and all that stuff, but it's like at the same time it's like we need to take economic responsibility and own spaces and support those spaces, you know, like Harlem or Train or like whatever it is, like figure it out. There's a new spot called Poetry in Kensington, like
yeah.
Black owned spaces or people of color owned spaces or whatever.
Or Unlovable is another
Unlovable
black.
Is another one. It's like, you know, I'm not saying just go
which
to
I'm
like black owned clubs, but it's
Thursday,
like but at the same time,
night.
If you're gonna book a party,
strawberry
and
sandwiches,
you know, can you stop that? And you know that you're gonna make
yeah.
some money, you know, then book it at a club that you know is owned by people who also need that support. And that's also really frustrating.
Or
midfield. I'm not done. People talk about like. As soon as they can jump ship to like hang out with like people with money and white folks, they do it. And it's like, don't do that. Like, you know, put it back. Introduce the white people into the environment so they're not afraid of us or whatever it is. Like, it can happen. But as soon as we get an opportunity, a lot of this jump. No, it happens all the time. So stop booking at big hotels. Like, book. Like, you know what I mean?
I mean, I think it's a bigger picture than the actual. Let's not play with white people things. Like,
I'm not
I
saying
mean,
let's not play with white people. I'm saying
yeah.
We live in a white supremacist world. I'm sorry, but that's
yes.
Just where we live. And
yes.
I'm not going to, it's not that I don't have white friends and blah, blah, blah. It's not
some
that.
Of my best
that's,
friends are white.
Yes,
but
that's
well, yeah,
not the
no.
Point. The point is that is the reality that we're living in. And that needs to change. And it's going to change if we just do it. And it's changing,
yes.
You know? You know what I mean? Like it's this, I don't talk about this very often, obviously, because I get in trouble a lot. But I really believe that. I really believe that we need to have economic power, not in a capitalistic way, because that's just mimicking, like, colonization. It's the same. I don't want to colonize people. I want you to eat with me at the same table.
Yeah, I think it's all about let's all eat together. Let's share food, break bread. Yes, eat together.
Yeah,
sorry.
Well, I mean, exclusion and not allowing people to eat is a problem.
Yes,
problem,
yes.
You know what I mean? Like
yes.
The light skin, everything, dark skin, like everything.
No,
it's like, stop
it's,
it.
Yeah, like exclusion, right?
Yeah.
So I want to allow you guys to kind of plug what's coming up for you guys. What's coming up for you musically and what's coming up at Munich too.
Tomorrow night we're playing an OCAP benefit at 25 Cecil Street, which is Ontario Coalition Against Poverty. And then March 7th, I'm with a collective called R3, which is a collective of really radical artists, musicians, visual artists, all kinds of stuff. And we're having a launch March 7th at the Garrison. And then Unit 2, Unit 2, obviously, Sunny B's got a CD release. On the 1st, Debbie Young has a comic. She's launching a comic strip, a Debbie Young comic. Book. She'll be doing it with Motion and Saida. I think I'm performing in my Kudas performance. If you want to know more about what's happening at Unit 2,
yeah,
if you just look up Unit 2 on Facebook.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's like a, I'll post that on the Facebook page
yeah.
And all that stuff so you can connect to Unit 2 specifically.
Yeah.
If you have any questions, you can contact them.
And I should also let people know that there's another space called the Academy of the Impossible, which is another independent space. And we're running a 3-month spoken word and sound program, which is free for people between the ages of 14 and 29. You get tokens, you get food, you want to learn about sound and poetry and recording. You come out for a couple hours on Monday nights, and we will be there.
Awesome. And how about, is there anything coming out for you guys musically?
Yeah, there's a bunch of prospective releases on various labels. For our side project, but in terms of Lao, we are working on a new record which we are hoping to release in February of 2014.
Okay.
Yes.
Awesome. Thank you so much for coming in the studio and I could come back.
And so let's support independent business. essentially, right? And then that can be, that can look like many different things.
Let's break bread.
Let's break together. But let's actually also figure out a way that we are way more common than we are different, but realize that there are problems in how people are treated and we can't ignore that, you know?
Yeah, and I think it's also kind of changing the, you know, paradigm where, you know, people, because a lot of us are like trying to sort of make it to whatever that is. But I think the point is that we need to move together as a group, you know? We
have exactly.
To move together, uplift each other, make bread together.
Make the bread, yes. Make it.
Together,
yes.
Yes. And we have to sort of collectively uplift each other.
Yeah.
No doubt.
So, if you're just tuning in, this is Mally, aka Dr. Vivian, and you are listening to Artists in the City. You have been listening to Lal, who is in studio with me, and we're heard here every week, 6 to 7 on Roots Reggae Radio. We're going to